Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hello, friends, and happy Easter Monday to you. I am coming to you live from my parents' house in Wexford, where I'm looking out the window and the sun has finally decided to come out, which is a delight. I recorded this episode on a bed in a house that has children in it. And if you hear any random noises, that's what those are. I hope you're good. I hope you had a good weekend. I had a great weekend. I was celebrating a friend's birthday on Friday, which is loads of fun. And then we came down here and have been just wholesoming it up ever since. Easter egg hunts, Easter eggs, sausages, slow-roasted lamb. We're not eating ram, not this year. And all that kind of stuff. I will be back with you, obviously, with the celebs on Wednesday. But for now, your bank holiday news update. Hello, Carl Kinsella, and happy Easter Monday to you. I was just saying to you, I'm sure you've been flat out at the Bible for the whole weekend, have you?
I actually do love the story of Easter. I think it's like the greatest story ever told, because it just has, it has like betrayal, yeah, has a trial. It has some degree of lust between Mary Magdalene and Jesus. You know, it just kind of has, it ticks all the boxes. So I love Easter.
Yeah, I'm like, I wasn't raised religious. I did have a brief dalliance with born again Christianity as a teenager, but that was mainly about singing and not so much about the actual religion, unfortunately. So I actually don't really know the stories that well. And I found a lot of entertainment over the weekend in arguing with people about whether Jesus was in fact gone for 2 days or three. Because the story obviously goes that it was 3 days, but he goes on Friday and comes back on Sunday. I'm like, that's 2 days, babes.
I'd be in your corner completely. Yeah. Because he was crucified at 3 p.m. on the Friday, and he rose at dawn on the Sunday. So you're talking about really almost 1 day.
Less than 2 days. Yeah.
Yeah. And not even a working day, a Saturday.
Yeah. It is a fun one to bring up, though. It really gets people riled up. Sorry, no disrespect, by the way, if you are religious and listening to this and Easter is a genuine holiday for you. I think it's just, it's become such a cultural holiday now. And so many people who kind of are acknowledging it in their lives aren't really religious. It is kind of amusing. But again, no disrespect if you are genuinely Christian or Catholic or a religion which celebrates Easter in sincerity. Okay, we've got lots to talk about, Carl, as always. And the story that actually I was surprised was really buzzing around. I was at a birthday party on Friday and people kept bringing this up. People were really shocked by this, is the story of Jeffrey Donaldson.
It's a pretty shocking story so far. And I think, and the manner in which it came out was also just very surprising. So Jeffrey Donaldson, who is or was the leader of the DUP in Northern Ireland, he's the MP for Lagan Valley. He was arrested on Friday, and he has been charged with historical sexual offences, which, you know, I think people are probably well within their rights to be shocked. It's like, how often is the leader of a political party embroiled in something this scandalous? Now, of course, you know, we are journalists and we have to be very careful to note that Jeffrey Donaldson is innocent until proven guilty. But on Friday, it was very, like, so the kind of two stories came out at once. There was this story that a 61-year-old man was at Newry Police Station charged with historical sex offences. And at the same time, 61-year-old Jeffrey Donaldson deleted all of his social media. Mm-hmm. And it has since transpired as well that his wife, Eleanor, was arrested along with him. And she's been arrested for aiding and abetting the crime that he's charged with.
Right.
So
and historical sexual offences, just to be clear, so that we're all on the same page, that means sexual offences that have happened in the past.
That's really all it means.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's probably some cut-off point at which, I mean, if you were talking about an offence from maybe a year or 2 years ago,
yeah,
I feel like the suggestion with historical sexual offences tends to be decades.
Yes.
You know, we don't know those kind of details, but I think, you know, in the news, if you see or if you hear from the police, if you hear historical sexual offences, you'd be thinking something that happened maybe in the 1970s or the 1980s.
Yeah.
And of course, so Donaldson has resigned, and that has led to just huge tumultuous upheaval up in the north. So, you know, Donaldson, there's an emergency DUP meeting on Friday. The DUP emerged from that with a new interim party leader. That's Gavin Robinson. So Gavin Robinson is their new party leader in the aftermath of Jeffrey Donaldson. Emma Little Pengilly, who is she is the leader of the sort of the northern branch in terms of being, she is the deputy first minister in the north, and she said she's going to work now closely with Gavin Robinson. None of it's because of the nature of the scandal. It's very, very hard for MPs or TDs or anyone to, or MLAs to be commenting on it.
Yeah.
You know, so we've heard words like devastated and we've heard words like shocked, but you know, it's not actually possible for them to get into sort of any speculation or analysis. The PSNI actually issued a warning to people, warning them not to engage online in speculation or their own kind of opinions on this, because it can derail a trial.
Yeah.
It can prejudice a jury. You can end up in contempt of court situations. So, I mean, it's a minefield for everybody, because, you know, it's such a huge story. It's very hard not to talk about it. It's very difficult for people not to sort of draw their own conclusions, particularly when information is kind of withheld.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, that's kind of how the criminal justice system does work, and people have to be, they have to observe it and they have to appreciate it.
Yeah, and I always think the important thing to remember in these situations is that the last thing you would ever want to happen in any case where there are, excuse me, allegations of abuse, the last thing you would want would be for anybody who was accused, who had genuinely like perpetrated sexual abuse, to get off on the basis of speculation online or elsewhere. So it's just something that obviously you have to be very careful about. But like Jeffrey Donaldson, you know, he's been a political presence for my entire life. Like, I think that's why so many people are shocked.
For sure, he's a huge presence. And then, of course, you tie in the fact that the DUP are essentially a sort of a fundamentalist Christian party.
Yeah.
You know, they will frequently lead the charge on things that they see as sort of indecent, or, you know, like they have very controversial views politically on the rights of gay people. You know, they've always been a real, you know, like it's true conservatism in a way that is sort of reminds people of like the Tea Party Republicans or the MAGA Republicans. It's hardcore. You know, they have strange opinions about how old the world is, about whether or not dinosaurs existed. So I think, you know, the DUP, it comes with this certain cultural cachet. So to hear that this sort of to hear that one of their, I mean, their actual leader is embroiled in a scandal like this, you know, I think the shock is understandable, because I think, let's face it, it would be really shocking either way. I think it is just such a, it is such, for someone in such a position of power to be accused of something so heinous is, you know, it's just a huge story. And the fact that it, you know, it's obviously credible, or the PSNI see it as credible enough for them to take, you know, actionable steps in terms of arrests and charges, you know, I think that's it. It's the kind of thing that's, it's probably knocked everybody for six. And at such a pivotal time for Northern Ireland as well. You know, Stormont has just resumed. Michelle O'Neill and Emma Little Pengilly have been very clear that this is not going to disrupt, or they really intend for it not to disrupt the Stormont schedule. But there's just all sorts of crazy things in the air. You know, the UK will be having a general election very soon. So Donaldson's seat will be up for contest. You know, presumably he will not be putting himself forward for that race. So I mean, it is just it's a very crazy time now for Northern Irish politics, and this has only exacerbated at times. Well, God knows how many times. We'll see as more details come out.
Yeah, I think that's the unfortunate thing, is that, you know, the kind of political structure in Northern Ireland has been unstable for so long, and now they're finally kind of on some relatively solid ground, and then for this to happen, it's very unfortunate timing. I will say, like, you know, when you look at conservative politicians and politicians who tend to be very religious, like in America, there are stories of accusations like this coming out all the time for these kind of politicians. So I don't know, you know, like, is it, maybe it's not as shock. I think if you're following that, it's maybe less shocking than, you know, you would think. But as you say, we have to watch and see and let the legal process take its course and see where the chips fall. Okay, let's move on to Gaza. It's funny, you know, someone messaged me last week and thanked me for the fact that we were still talking about Gaza. And I found that kind of like really upsetting, the idea that like it wouldn't be spoken about. And yet, excuse me, sorry, I don't know why my voice is not playing well this morning, so I apologize. And yet, you know, I can see that it is kind of falling down in people's kind of, you know, consciousness, which I can understand, because it's hard to maintain the level of upset and intensity that many people have felt for months and months and months now. But I do feel like we're almost at kind of a turning point. What do you think?
Well, I think there have been, again, notable developments this week. We talked last week about how the sort of the political center in the United States is starting to tilt.
Turn, yeah.
Yeah. And I think there has been more evidence of that this week. I think partly, you know, this is Israel's own actions bringing it on themselves. You know, they're kind of making further incursions into Lebanon. You know, there have been other shootings at kind of sites where aid was being delivered. So I think it's, you know, we're at about 33,000 people who have now been killed by the IDF. So, I mean, it's unbelievable that it's gone on this long.
Yeah.
But yes, I think there is an element now of, there is sort of a shift. I mean, Ireland now this week, this is the big story in Ireland. Ireland has joined, it's intervened on behalf of South Africa at the ICJ in The Hague. That in itself is a really big step, because we've talked, you and I, for so long, I think everybody's been talked about how Ireland has been, you know, quite good rhetorically, quite good at the talking,
yeah,
and not so great at the action. And yet there's kind of no disputing that now this intervening on behalf of South Africa, because, I mean, people will remember, but the ICJ ordered that it didn't find that Israel was committing genocide, but what it did do is it made two orders, and it ordered them to stop doing anything that could plausibly be considered genocide. So they had to be taking steps to make sure to prevent any genocidal intent. And they also had to be allowing aid in towards Palestinian people, which we know is not happening.
Yeah.
As we've seen from multiple videos of, you know, starving children in hospitals and all sorts of other video footage. So, I mean, I think Micheál Martin, the Department of Foreign Affairs, they've acknowledged that Israel is not abiding by those steps at all. They've taken legal advice. They've analyzed what their sort of place in all of this is. It's a very rare thing. It's a rare thing to intervene on behalf of another country at the ICJ. So it's not necessarily clear what steps Ireland will take or what legal arguments that its sort of contribution will hinge on. But it's a huge step in a sort of in a supportive direction and in a direction of solidarity. So I think, yeah, people will have been very interested to see that this week.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose anything that feels like it's going to potentially push anything forward is exciting. But yeah, I think I guess I feel like I was kind of inarticulate when I introduced this topic. But like, I guess I just feel like people are so kind of full of despair with this now that like it does feel sort of hopeless. But it is good to see, you know, things turning slightly. I did see the three activists were arrested at Shannon Airport as they were trying to block US military planes. Now, this story of the US military using Shannon has been going on for decades now. You know, people have been unhappy about that for a long, long time, but it does feel particularly tricky these days, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's even trickier because there are fewer sort of rules pertaining to the military vehicles that come through in terms of like explaining what they're there for, you know, because they can use their sort of military clearance codes and you know, Homeland Security for these kind of excuses. But yeah, we've had protests like this for 20 years, really, since the war on terror began. But yeah, we had aircraft in last week, and there were three protesters who they approached the US plane. Like, this again, I can remember as a child that there were people arrested for this back in the day, and it really does just amount to approaching the plane. You know, it's not really, and these people end up getting arrested. They end up in jail. And of course the Galway, I'll get their name right here. The Galway Palestine Solidarity Complain. They have two of their members, two of the three people are their members. And, they're calling for an immediate release because, I mean, you know, I think it's hard to say, it's hard to look at something that is technically illegal and be like, oh, people are within their rights to do this. But I think when you kind of fold it all into the discussions we have about Palestine, it is, for me, it's representative of where Irish people are. And I think our involvement on behalf of South Africa is evidence of that. Like, clearly, even the politicians see that the way to sort of keep the public on side with respect to Palestine is to be very involved. So, I mean, I think it is just more evidence of how much Irish people do care about, they really do care about this issue.
One other aspect, and albeit maybe a less important aspect of this situation, is the ongoing conversation about Eurovision. Lots of people are asking their Eurovision representatives to pull out of the competition because, of course, Israel is being allowed to compete. These people are in a very tricky position, I think. You know, they're there to represent their country. It's usually hard fought. It's been very hard to get into the competition in the first place. And while it might not feel that serious to many people, it is serious to a lot of people within the realm of their career. And lots of people obviously would share the feeling that Israel shouldn't be there, but maybe would find it difficult to pull out of the competition. And this week there was kind of a response from some of the artists, wasn't there?
Yeah, so what you're referring to is there was a statement issued this week by 9 of the contestants, including Bambi Thug, who's the Irish contestant, and including Ollie Alexander, who's the UK contestant. And the statement, you know, I think the statement, it was divisive, I would say. There were people who supported the statement, but there were people who are really unhappy with it. And I think part of the reason people were so unhappy with it is not just the decision, the ultimate decision not to pull out. And let's face it, these artists, they did call for a ceasefire. They've said that they don't think Israel should be there. Bambi Thug, they released their own personal statement alongside the joint statement, in which they said that that it would be one fewer pro-Palestinian voice if they were to not be involved. So like, those are the kind of arguments that were being made. Ollie Alexander, similar argument. And, you know, you can see the logic to that. I think what upset people was in the original joint statement is the language is extremely PR-ified and extremely legalized, and just I think it really rubbed people the wrong way. There was a quote that was just about, you know, the unifying power of music. I mean,
I think it's worth reading. We firmly believe in the unifying power of music, enabling people to transcend differences and foster meaningful conversations and connections. We feel that it is our duty to create and uphold this space with a strong hope that it will inspire greater compassion and empathy.
Create and uphold this space. That really doesn't mean anything. I think even in the most generous way of reading that, that means nothing at all. As far as for years, I feel like artists who don't boycott things, they talk about the unifying and healing power of music.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, and there's maybe some merit to that. But right now, I think we know that the unifying power of music is not going to play a role in a ceasefire in Gaza.
Yeah.
I think best case scenario is that they show up and they do their performances at Eurovision and they take an even heavier stand at the Eurovision. If they were to say something while on stage or if they were to cause some degree of disruption, I think people would appreciate that. To me, I guess this statement doesn't really indicate that that's what's going to happen, but you never know. They are certainly in a tricky position. I saw other people pointing out that there's also obviously contractual obligations. And that someone like Ollie Alexander could be on the hook for millions if he were to pull out. But I suppose at the same time, Ollie Alexander did sign up for it in the first place. So it's one of those things where I don't really, we're talking about something so severe and so awful that I don't blame people for their outrage, because I think, you know, people are making sacrifices in order to, and not even just sacrifices in terms of boycotts. You know, I think people feel like they are sacrificing their sort of their mental health and their well-being to be as involved in protests as they are, mm-hmm. and movements like this. So I think when you have a music contest, and the Eurovision is really important to so many people, and I would never decry that. Mm. But I just think that this is why people are so upset, is because it doesn't feel worth, to a lot of people, it doesn't feel worth involvement in the Eurovision at the expense of, or at the risk of legitimizing, you know, what's going on in Israel and Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have a tendency, particularly, I think, in the current kind of political climate and internet and all of that stuff, we have a tendency to look at everything as very black or white. And that we don't tend to consider, you know, all the different factors that might come into someone's decision, or all the different factors that come into people's individual situations or choices or whatever. And, you know, we are at the end of the day all human beings. And if your entire life has been working towards Eurovision, and then you get to Eurovision, and then this happens, and, you know, you totally agree with the political point that would be made by not being part of a competition like this, but also, you know, you've committed, you've spent, you've worked, you've done everything. And then I think the question that sometimes people find themselves asking themselves is, you know, what difference is it going to make if I don't do this? And I think I can understand as a human being why you would come down to the choice that, like, look, I'm going to do it, but I'm also going to make it clear that I'm not that happy about it. Like, I get it. And I think that we do need to find kind of compassion within ourselves in these situations as well. But, you know, I think it is tricky when it's something like Eurovision that doesn't feel so important to the maybe the larger world. And I think that, yeah, you're right. That's the challenge. And you have to think that they're going to make a great effort at Eurovision to ensure that there aren't any kind of surprise political stances taken. Or, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they broadcast with a delay and stuff, because, you know, they will have a responsibility, won't they, to try and make sure that that doesn't happen.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, because, you know, I remember a couple of years ago there was an act, I think it was an Icelandic act, they held up a Palestinian flag, you know, the the bits they do after the songs where they cut to all the teams at their tables.
Yeah.
I think it was a team that held up a Palestinian flag, because obviously, you know, Israel's involvement in the Eurovision, people being annoyed about that, that's not a new thing.
No.
You know, Israel won it, I think, in 2019 or something, or 2018. And then the next one was held in Tel Aviv, obviously.
Yeah, they've won it a couple of times, because Dana International was an Israeli entry as well.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you know, this kind of is Eurovision being a sort of a political point of contention is, like, not new. So, yeah, I'd say maybe broadcasting with a delay, something like that. For me, you know, I think it'll be really interesting if, because I know Bambi Thog was asked by the Journal back at the Eurosong contest whether or not they felt that Israel should be involved, and they said no. So I think there's a lot of rebellious spirit there, and
yeah.
I think now it would be good if that could translate to something on the stage. If there's, you know, because we saw, for example, the impact of Jonathan Glazer's statement at the Oscars. Like, you know, a lot of people would have probably said that it would be best to stay out of the Oscars. And again, like, this is not me offering my own opinion. I'm just saying what could still happen.
Yeah.
You know, you could still have a meaningful protest at the Eurovision, I think.
I think so, too.
But I mean, all we can do is wait and see.
Yeah, 100%. Israel has actually won Eurovision 4 times. 1978, 1979, 1998, and 2018. It's competed 44 times, which is, I mean, it is wild. Like, what is Israel doing in the Eurovision? What is Australia doing in the Eurovision? Like, I think all of these questions are valid. Slightly different, different arguments, but valid.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Okay, let's move on. There has been a lot of chat about the hate bill, Ireland's hate crime bill, over the last couple of weeks. What is happening there?
Yeah, this is so the hate crime bill, it's been on the agenda for a really long time now, and it's quite hard to talk about because there are two, for me, there are two different arguments against it, and those arguments come from polar opposite political ideology. There are people who believe that the hate crime bill should be scrapped because, you know, it's you should never punish racism. You know, that's that's their take on it. And then there's another group who think that it should be scrapped because, you know, there is evidence to say that basically increasing laws, increasing punishments doesn't actually help people. It doesn't protect the vulnerable. All it actually does is create another arm, you know, another law by which, you know, over-policed communities can continue to be over-policed. So there's kind of two arguments against it, and both those arguments are sort of opposite to each other. But certainly what it has all resulted in is like the hate speech bill is pretty much on the chopping block. Sinn Féin have said that if they get into government, they'll scrap it. And they've said that too much time has been spent on it now. They've said that the definitions within it are too broad. And that's all referring to, you know, that kind of feels more like the former argument where you are essentially trying to avoid anyone ever being called racist. So it's tough. And, you know, you talk about the complications with it. Sinn Féin, for example, they voted in favor of this bill in April last year. Before it came before the Seanad in June when they voted against it. So Sinn Féin have kind of been all over the place on it. Fianna Fáil, you know, we've talked about Willie O'Dea, they want to move away from it. Fine Gael want to push ahead with it, and it's Fine Gael's baby. It's Helen McEntee's project.
Yeah.
She's the Minister for Justice, and her intention, she has said, is to publish it with amendment. And she said she has listened to the complaints. I think it's probably not super clear going into the next phase whether the complaints she's listened to have been from one side or the other side or from both sides. But it is still going to be considered, this bill. It's going to be voted on. And it's a government bill, so, you know, it's a very strong chance it's going to pass.
Well, I saw Panty tweeting about this over the last... Excuse me, this is driving me insane. I don't know why my voice will not wake up. But Panty tweeted, throwing a brick with F word out on it, the homophobic slur on it, written on it through the window of Panty Bar with customers inside should be a hate crime. Scrawling pedo bar on its walls should be a hate crime. Attacking LGBTI plus people in the street, screaming slurs should be a hate crime. Burning traveler accommodation should be a hate crime. Torching direct provision centres should be a hate crime. There are leftist arguments against hate crime legislation, but the TDs and parties now turning tail are not making those arguments. They are being wagged by the far right. And, you know, that's like, how can you argue
that's
with
a good
that?
Analysis.
Because there are people then in her replies saying, well, those things are crimes. And Panty's point is that, you know, Panty replies to one of those tweets and says, but spraying pedo bar on Panty is considered simple graffiti, and it's not. Crimes motivated by hate deserve special classification. And, you know, I think Panty's right. Like, there is a difference between, you know, tagging evoke who is a Vogue, by the way, all over Dublin on walls. I'm dying to know who that person is.
I think it was me. Imagine if I got really defensive right now and I was like, nobody is it. What are you talking about?
Sorry, if you live in Dublin, you've seen Evoke, E-V-O-K-E. It's everywhere, all over Dublin. But anyway, there is a difference between spraying that on a wall and spraying pedo bar on panty bar. And like, that should be recognized, I think.
Yeah, and those are, I mean, you can definitely see there are clearly gaps in Irish legislation, because that is something that, you know, to consider that simple graffiti is, that's insane.
No, absolutely.
You know, that is clearly something that is targeted. It's meant to intimidate, it's meant to harass, it's meant to make people feel small and frightened. So like, you know, and certainly I think the laws that we have on the books pertaining to things like this are really old. Mm. So this is something that does need updating for sure. Mm. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what kind of amendments we've got when Helen McEntee brings the bill forward again. But it's right now it's a huge wedge. It's why, you know, Elon Musk has gotten involved in this at certain points and started tweeting about how Ireland shouldn't have a hate speech bill. And I mean, he is obviously on the side of just the people who want to be able to say whatever they like without any consequence. And oftentimes, you know, that will amount to, you know, some really frightening, you know, this is, you know, some people would probably look at the situation we've ended up in in terms of the spate of arson attacks on refugee accommodation, which is obviously something Panty mentioned in her tweet, you know, and you would say that the very, very loose attitude we have towards the way people communicate online has facilitated that, because, you know, I would say that we have missed pretty obvious warning signs because a lot of this language doesn't sort of set off a bit of a warning bell. You know, whether that's the same thing as, you know, what would be protected in a, or what would be enforceable in a hate speech bill kind of remains to be seen. But certainly Ireland does lag in certain respects in how we treat some of the language. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to this story about a collapsed bridge in Baltimore in the United States. This was a pretty big story over the course of the week. And the visuals with this are mad.
I really thought it was an AI video when I first saw it, because I mean, we've seen so many kind of weird fake AI, and just, I really didn't know it was something that was on the cards, that, you know, a super ship essentially could hit a bridge and the bridge could collapse, and it all came from a power outage. It wasn't like any desperate, wasn't like a drunk captain or anything like that. It was, you know, it was technical, you know, kind of much like we've discussed in the past with like the Boeing planes that have suffered issues. You know, we've just got a technical problem that has led to this huge infrastructural collapse, and even more importantly, you know, six construction workers were working on the bridge at the time. They, you know, they obviously fell into the river, and the search for them has been called off, so that is six people presumed dead. So it's an extremely tragic event, you know, absolutely disastrous for the city of Baltimore, because that bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, if you look at it, you can tell how important of a bridge, because it's enormous, right?
Yeah.
So like, you know, without that bridge, I think that's a huge artery for their sort of industry. So it's just, and even I think just emotionally, the sight of a bridge like that collapsing, something so enormous and something that your city is built around, just really disturbing stuff.
So what happened? There was a power outage, because I kind of missed this. I'm not clear on this myself. There was a power outage, and as a result of that, there was a crash. That's what happened.
A power outage, which kind of essentially caused the ship to drift.
Right.
You know, and the ship just sort of, it's almost as if it's on sort of autopilot, drifting in towards the bridge, and it hits the bridge, and then the bridge just fully comes down.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is my own naivete and lack of like engineering knowledge, but like, I just, you know, I feel like you assume that there's something, some wizardry involved that keeps these things standing, even if they get hit, you know? And the bridge just, it really did just come down like a matchbox bridge, you know?
Yeah, it's worth, I think, having a look at the video if you're interested in that, because I think that's one of the reasons. I mean, aside from the fact that it doesn't happen very often, and obviously the absolute tragedy of the loss of lives, but like, I think it is one of the reasons it was such a big story, is because visually it's a really crazy thing to see, and very, very unfortunate. Okay, but there's nothing kind of untoward happening there. It is just a really tragic thing that happened.
Sure. I mean, politically in the United States, the response to it has been horrifying. You have a lot of people who on the right who have claimed, and this is not like a fringe view, this is a mainstream right-wing view, that the reason this happened is because the company behind building the ship and the company behind building the bridge, blah, 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 that all of them are now using diversity, equity, and inclusion policies in their hiring. So essentially, they're trying to argue that this has happened because we have more diversity in the workforce, which is obviously a racist argument. It's a stupid argument. Honestly, it made me like, there's so much about the US that has made me lose faith over the last couple of years, but reading the sheer stupidity in response to the, and like there was some very high profile person who referred to the mayor of Baltimore, his name is Brandon Scott, he's a black man, 39 years old, referred to him as a DEI mayor, which is, you know, you're talking about plain and simple racism. And it really is just kind of the language has been kind of subbed out for something new. And so, I mean, this is something DEI, you know, you kind of just hope that it doesn't come to Irish shores where you have right-wing people complaining about DEI the same way they complained about woke for the last 5 years. But yeah. I mean,
it feels kind of inevitable, doesn't it?
It doesn't. Yeah. So, you know, listeners can be on the feckin' watch out for that one, because it's going to have us all tearing our hair out in the next couple of years, I think.
Oh my God, guys, Carl said feckin'. That's pretty big.
And you know, I actually swear quite a lot off the pod. I think
you're being professional, and I respect it.
Totally. That's me. I'm just so professional.
Okay, this next story is not that important to most people, although I'm sure it's very important to the people involved in it. But I just really, really enjoyed it. And I felt like on a bank holiday Monday, we deserved a treat. So tell us about the stolen hanging baskets, Carl.
This is amazing. And okay, this is amazing. So this is a situation that's going on down in Cork. There were two hanging baskets sold from a neighborhood in, well, from
stolen.
The town of Inch. She had two. Well, a woman has been accused of stealing the hanging baskets. We can't say any more or less than that right now. But the way the arrest was made was that some concerned citizens put one of those Apple tracker devices, you know, that you use to stick onto stuff. I don't actually know what people use those for in day-to-day life.
They use them so that they don't have to, like, they put them in their luggage if they're traveling, so they know where their luggage is, or in your, you might put one on your keys or in your handbag or whatever, so you don't lose it.
Yes, okay, that all makes a lot of sense. So they put those little geotaggers in the hanging baskets. They tracked the hanging baskets, and at the location where the hanging baskets, you know, the hanging baskets were, they were found, you know, seemingly in a woman's house, and that woman has been arrested and charged, and now she's before the courts.
Can you imagine, like, stealing some hanging baskets? I mean, first of all, like, not good, obviously, but can you imagine stealing some hanging baskets and then realizing that you've been rumbled? Because, like, you, how mortified would you be answering the door to the police with six stolen hanging baskets? It was actually six. Sorry, we got that wrong. That six stolen hanging baskets were in your home. And I mean, you couldn't argue with them. Like, I just think, like, because the kind of person who would steal hanging baskets is obviously someone who has an interest in the hanging baskets. And therefore, I would think appearances, like, they've got to be mortified.
And just to be clear, they have pled not guilty. So, I mean, it could be that there's a reasonable explanation for all of this.
Mm. We'll see. I love that they put the trackers in there in the first place. Just makes me very, very happy.
It's genius. And someone actually did it really recently as well with their recycling, and it got brought to kind of a non-recycling center, and they caught out a company that way.
What?
So I think these trackers could be, like, pretty, you know, a pretty big technology in the coming years for people who are sleuths.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just to finish us out, a good news story. Thailand has legalized same-sex marriage.
Yes, Thailand has become the third Asian country, I believe. It's not quite legalized yet, but they are going to legalize it.
Sorry, yes.
So it's amazing news. It's, you know, and it was passed overwhelmingly. Thailand is a kind of a weird country politically. Like, they do have sort of military revolutions from time to time, so, you know, you would worry that this could be kind of reversed. But, you know, as it stands, it's really fantastic news. I think they joined Taiwan and Nepal as the third Asian country to legalize same-sex marriage. And yeah, it's just fantastic for people in Thailand. Thailand's already quite a permissive country in terms of, it's one of the more, like, liberal countries in that region. So yeah, it's just good news.
You love to see it.
Good for them.
Yeah. Well, Carl, I'm going to let you go and enjoy the rest of your day. I'm going to go back to mothering my children, and I will talk to you next Monday. Oh, by the way, obviously you can read Carl's brilliant column, Surrealing in the Years, on thejournal.ie every week. And where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me at TV's Carl Kinsella on Twitter or at carl.kinsella on Instagram.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.